Hello, everyone. Welcome into Young Lads, episode 8. It is currently Monday night, so we're going to get right into this. Peter DeFeo Jr. alongside Harris Eisenberg. Harris, just quick thoughts. We just watched LSU and Wake Forest. We also watched a really good game with Stanford and Tennessee earlier this afternoon. We'll talk about that, too, because Chase Burns is just on a completely different level when it comes to his reliever role. He's more of a starter going to a reliever role. But first, Wake Forest beats LSU 3-2. They were down 2-0 until the seventh inning when they scored two runs, and then they were able to squeak by with another run in the eighth inning before Chris Manassi, who has tremendous stuff out of the back end of that bullpen for Wake Forest, came in and shut the door down for LSU. So now they move on to Wednesday. What's your initial reaction on this last game that we just saw?
I think it was as advertised. I think everybody knew coming into it, it was like, okay, we're getting LSU and Wake, probably the most a highly anticipated college baseball game we've had in quite a long time. In fact, you know, I debatably almost got in the car and drove to Omaha because I knew this game was going to be so good. Glad didn't put that on the car. But, I mean, both pitchers were great. Like, Josh Hartle gave Wake Forest everything that they needed. Six innings, he only allowed two runs. It really only should have been one, but you know, Adam Cecere had that little bit of a misplay in left field with the glare in the ballpark. Ty Floyd was good through five, ended up losing it a bit in the sixth. He got squeezed a little bit. I don't know if you saw the close-up on him before Jay Johnson took the ball from him, but he was telling the umpire like a couple of those last pitches were strikes. So it was a little unfortunate. And, you know, Thatcher Hurd had to go three innings because of it. And, you know, he allowed the eventual game-deciding run in the eighth inning. But, you know, there's nothing you can really do about it if you're Thatcher Hurd. I mean, he was great. Wake Forest just put two good swings on him in the eighth inning, and that was really it. But, yeah, you nailed it right on the head. You know, after Hartle came out, Cole Rowland came in. I mean, that dude, first of all, tossing the ball on his hands, tossing his glove around. I mean, he must have had like a quadruple shot of espresso before the game.
I kind of wanted to text you during it, but like he drank all the Red Bull. Like they might have like a thing of Red Bull out in the bullpen. He drank all of it. Like there's no way that guy didn't have at least 400 milligrams of caffeine running through his system when he got on the mound.
Yeah, and he only goes two-thirds of an inning. He walks the last guy face. And, you know, Wake Forest has these weapons out of the pen because one thing goes wrong with Rowland. Here comes Michael Massey, and he's a power guy. He throws to Tommy White, one pitch out, and you're done. Like, simple as that. That cruise walk by Rowland in the seventh could have meant something much bigger if Tommy White was able to work a really good at-bat against Massey. Instead, Massey challenges him with a fastball, and we're done. Then you go to the eighth inning, Massey, you know, allows a walk. Here comes Cam Manassi. Great stuff. I mean, he was hitting 97 on the gun with ease. He was really good. And then it set everything up. Again, Danny Corona, who had the game-winning hit in Saturday's game for Wake Forest, comes through with a big double. And then Bennett Lee, the guy who, you know, they bring this guy in from Tulane. And Manassi actually helped with that. Manassi was the one who called him up in the offseason while Lee was in the portal, be like, hey man, like we need a catcher. Like, let's bring you in here. I mean, this dude's a veteran. He's a leader. And what I loved about it too was that he said in the postgame interview on ESPN that he actually called time himself and ran down to third base coach Bill Cilento. And I don't know if you saw the conversation, but it just looked like they were two buddies joking around in what is the biggest moment of the season. And two pitches later, boom, single through the left side, and the Deeks are up by one. The same thing happened two games ago when Danny Corona ran down to go talk to the third base coach Cilento. Next pitch was the game-winning single. So whatever Bill Cilento's whispering, it's got to be magic. But yeah, that game was incredible, just as advertised. Wake Forest showed their depth not only in the pen, but at the plate as well. You know, Wilkin had the big single. Kurtz was really not much of a factor. Two walks, two strikeouts for him. But yeah, Danny Corona, Bennett Lee at the 6 and 7 spots getting it done. And Wake Forest pitching shows why they're the best in the nation.
Yeah, the only thing I thought about too when Bennett Lee went down to the third base coach is I was like, you can't smile and joke around and have a 1-2 count on you and then strike out.
Yeah.
Like you can't just like go down looking or take a terrible swing at a curveball in the dirt. Like, you have to do something. And I mean, sure enough, he just sat back on a hanging curveball that Hurd just tried to bury and didn't. Tried to get inside and try to go that back door, or I guess kind of back door, back foot curveball, and just hung it. And Bennett Lee did exactly what he wanted to do. And then, you know, we talked about LSU's bullpen a lot too. It's like they've been really good in this College World Series. They're kind of a little iffy against Stanford.
Tennessee.
Against Tennessee, letting them get back in when Paul Skenes had that really good outing for them. But they've been good. They're still walking a little bit too many for my liking. Even Thatcher Hurd today walked three in his 3 1/3, but he struck out four. So this LSU bullpen's looked pretty good. They gave up the 3 runs today. And now you got a tough matchup against Tennessee. Again, another rematch to see if you can face Wake. And we were talking about it. If LSU finds a way to win against Tennessee and then wins the first game against Wake Forest, there's an if necessary game on Thursday. You could very well have Rhett Lauder versus Paul Skenes.
I talked about how today's game was the most highly anticipated game. I think if that ends up being the outcome, where there's an if necessary and Lauder goes against Skenes, that could be one of the elite college baseball games, maybe of all time. And it's almost reminiscent of 2 years ago in the College World Series when NC State played Vanderbilt and Jack Leiter went toe-to-toe with Sam Heifel, who was a freshman All-American, and Heifel outlasted Leiter, who ended up being, you know, the number one, number two overall pick in the draft. So, I mean, we could get another one like that. But, yeah, those two, Lauder and Skenes, really proved it. I mean, Skenes was great again on Saturday. Lauder, shaky first inning, but was able to minimize damage. And, you know, he was Lauder after that. He pitched pretty well in his 5 1/3.
Yeah, it just seemed like Stanford was sitting on his two-seam and his more so his changeup, because it looked like whatever Lauder was trying to do off-speed-wise, that Stanford was just kind of sitting on it. And they were kind of spitting on the two-seam, waiting for him to get to that changeup, or vice versa. It could have been his two-seam. I don't remember, because both of them kind of looked the same in that outing. But it looked like they were just sitting on something. They were like, we're not going to let him get to this pitch. We're just going to attack, attack, attack. And that's what they did in the first inning. I think they scored, what, both of their runs in the first inning? No, they scored one in the first, one in the third. And then after that, Lauder just kind of shut him down, and sort of the Wake bullpen. But, I mean, that could be a really good matchup between Lauder and Skenes, who now we talked about this a little bit too before. We kind of talk to each other before we actually start this podcast, but Skenes has got to be number one, right? He's got to be 1-1 by the Pittsburgh Pirates. And you even brought up a really good statement that the Pirates are good this year. So why not draft Skenes and then kind of like let him get a couple of innings in high A, double A ball, and then just bring him up to the bullpen? Because you can use him as a one-and-done type of guy out of the bullpen, the same way that TCU, or no, the same way that the Royals used Brandon Finnegan when they drafted him from TCU. You know, that was in 2014, I believe that was. I don't think that was their World Series win in 2015. I think that was in 2014. So you can kind of use him like that, because I keep forgetting his name. The pitcher that went to Stanford that's on ESPN, that does all the college baseball broadcasts and everything. But he made a really good point. It's like, you're not drafting Skenes to put him in the minors this year, because he's already thrown that many innings. You already know what he looks like. He's an MLB ace throwing in college. So it's like, why not just draft him as the Pirates? Because one, you're going to have him for the next 5-6 years, and put him in the back of the bullpen if you're in a playoff hunt.
The only thing it's going to come down to, whether or not the Pirates want to pick Skenes, is the money. It's if they're willing to shell out a haul for him after he gets drafted and they got to sign him. Now, yeah, Skenes has to be the number one overall pick. There's no the value of a pitcher who keep in mind was a catcher in high school and a two-way guy. in his 2 years at Air Force. So you got to remember, this is a guy who's not as injury prone as some other guys who have logged lengthy innings in college before. Like, this dude has bursted onto the scene and has only been throwing 100 miles an hour, you know, since he's gotten to LSU. But just his demeanor on the mound, the way he knows to utilize his pitches, you're right, the Pirates are good. Skeens has to go number one. You got to think about now if you're the Pirates, because, you know, when are you going to have a shot at making the playoffs with Andrew McCutchen on your roster, with a good and healthy Brian Reynolds on your roster? Like, now we're talking about adding a legitimate piece. If it were up to me and I would act like a dum-dum, I'd sign Skeens and throw him in the rotation the next day at the big league level. He's that good. He's that ready. Now, that's a really dumb decision because, you know, it's nice to face pro hitters. You stick him in single A to start, move him up to double A, kind of like what the Angels did with Neto, how he ended last year after he got drafted in double A. You let him go to double A. You let him face live hitters that are pros. You get to September, you call him up, and hopefully you're in a wild card push, because now the NL wild card is, and the NL Central is just absolutely so clustered up. It's anybody's division. You got the Pirates, the Reds, Cubs are not that far out. You know, Cardinals stink. So, you know, there's an opportunity here. And the Brewers are obviously really good. They're in first. So, yeah, you know, this comes down to legitimately, is this guy MLB ready? And every time on the broadcast, it's like, yeah, he is 100% ready. Whoever makes the picks had him projected to go five. No shot he lasts that long. If he's not going one, he's going two. This is the best college baseball pitcher since Steven Strasburg. He's definitely going in the top two.
I was just about to ask you, is if he was as good of a prospect as, you know, Garrett Cole or Steven Strasburg were, because, I mean, you can make the comparison that there's the hype is around him, and there hasn't been this type of hype around a prospect since Bryce Harper. Really. I mean, when was the last time there was a quote unquote, you know, best prospect since debate?
Well, when's the last time we had a number one overall pick and people were like, this dude's big league ready right now? When's the last time that's happened?
Strasburg.
Yeah. Yeah. And he, yeah. I mean, you're 100% right. But just the demeanor that Skeens has, you know, over Strasburg and Cole. You know, Strasburg, yeah, he was good coming out. I mean, he was great. But, you know, here's a little, you know, 6'3", 6'4", not really much build on him. You know, it's just a thin skin and bones kid who could throw strikes and throw pretty hard. I mean, Skeens, just the overall look on this dude. Like, he's big. He's got the stash, which, I mean, people love. I mean, this dude is just, like, everything you want. Paul Skeens, right now, if it wasn't for Shohei Ohtani, when Skeens makes the major leagues, he might be the face of baseball of the pitcher group in the entire league if he can have the same success that he has at LSU. I'm making that bold claim right now because the way this dude's demeanor, I mean, you see him flipping his fingers up in the air after a strikeout. I love that. I love the cockiness. There's no pitcher in the big leagues right like that right now. The only one I could say is maybe James Karinchak, but he's not even in the big leagues right now. He got sent down to AAA. So I love it. I think the demeanor is just something
maybe
that's
Marcus
awesome.
Stroman? Maybe kind
yeah,
of
but
Marcus
he's a nutcase. He's a nutcase. If you know, if Skeens, I don't think Skeens is on Twitter. Skeens isn't on Twitter, that plays better because Stroman's just, he just makes some weird controversial statements. He's just an interesting fella, you know. But how about, I mean, this is as hyped as it is. How about the police escort that he gets back into the lobby of the hotel? I mean, you got to be pretty big time to get that at the College World Series.
Yeah, and I mean, it was kind of weird, too, hearing on the broadcast, too. They were saying that he thinks he became better because of his schedule that he has now at LSU as opposed to, you know, opposed to playing at the Air Force Academy. It's like he's saying he's getting more sleep now. His schedule isn't as rigorous. So, I mean, it's kind of just weird how going from the Air Force Academy to where you basically everything is scheduled out to now going to LSU where you have to schedule everything out yourself, basically, that it turned him into a better pitcher because he's getting two more hours of sleep than he did before.
Well, it's because you got people who care. They care not only about the athlete, but they care about the human being. And it all goes into, you know, they're talking about Wake Forest has that pitching lab, which I actually had the chance to be in once just by fluke a couple years ago, and it was legit. LSU's got something similar, and like they just care so much about arm care and sleep at this level. I remember at Air Force, you know, Skeens was also catching, and he was also at Air Force. There's a lot of other priorities when you go to a school like Air Force. So now you're at LSU, right? And you know you're there to play ball for 1 year, and that's it. So why not, you know, take your recovery seriously, your sleep seriously. You know, I saw something on either YouTube or it was on one of the broadcasts about basically his routine in between starts, and I thought it was just super fascinating at what he does. So, yeah, I mean, I legitimately think this dude could be the face of baseball if he has the similar career that he does at LSU in his first few years in pro ball.
So now we got to talk about the other team that's moving on that I thought was going to be making it into the College World Series Finals, and that's Florida. They play, let's see, I'm looking at the schedule right now. They play the winner of TCU and Oral Roberts. Oral Roberts and TCU played a fantastic opening game. You couldn't have asked for a better game. You thought TCU scored three in the bottom of the eighth, and you're like, oh, that's it. TCU's got game one. And then all of a sudden, Blaze Brother comes up with two guys on and just absolutely crushes a baseball to give him the lead. And I text you afterwards. I was like, give him all of the gummy worms. And I don't, did you watch the game? Did you listen to it?
I saw the very end of it. Like I saw the home run and all
did
that.
Did you hear the call by Carl Ravitch though?
I did. Yeah. Yeah. That was a little disappointing on Carl, but you know what? I saw a tweet and, you know, it comes to light because, you know, I'm a broadcaster, not at a high level, but I am. I mean, you're in it as well. You know, we're human beings. We make mistakes. So, you know, a little disappointing that you forget what inning it is. I'll say that's kind of a big one. I personally have never forgotten what inning it was in a baseball game. Maybe I've forgotten a count here or there, but, you know, it happens. Anyways, Blaze Brothers, first of all, elite baseball name. I mean, just the names of some of these guys in college baseball. You throw a Blaze Brothers at me, that is elite of the elite names right there. And he's hitting nine, don't forget. But this is the story of Oral Roberts. Like, this happened in the Super Regional against Oregon. Like, they just don't go away. Even last night against Florida, it just never went away. Made it a one-run game. It's just incredible. It's every guy top to bottom. And you talk about guys or you talk about teams who are kind of unfavored coming in. Like 2 years ago, it felt like to me that Mississippi State was kind of the underdog, especially because they had to play Vandy. Like, I feel like Oral Roberts could be, you know, very well the sleeper team in this whole thing.
Yeah. And I was listening to it on the radio going back when they tied it up at first. And then I was able to watch the Blaze Brothers or when they got the first run in the ninth inning, and then I was able to get home just in time for Blaze Brothers to hit the home run. But they said something that kind of resonated with me. It said, you have to get all 27 outs with Oral Roberts, meaning, and they meant it as you can't be lackadaisical on a couple of outs because Oral Roberts will make you pay. You have to make sure that you are locked in for all 27 outs. And that's basically what's been happening with them. Even the game against Florida on Sunday, you know, there was, let's see, I've got it right here. They scored one in the ninth, but it was
5-1.
It was 5-1 at one point, and then now they're just battling back. It's, they are such a tough out, and it is so hard to have a shutdown inning. I think Florida had one shutdown inning that entire time. I'm trying to look right now, because even when they scored two in the second, Oral Roberts came back for one in the second. Florida scored three, and then they had the shutdown inning finally. And then in the seventh and the ninth, Oral Roberts scored a couple of runs. But it is so hard to just count out Oral Roberts because we saw it in the Supers against Oregon. They were up 8-0. Then they end up losing that game. You could have very easily just taken it away and said, okay, they're about to get swept by Oregon. Oregon's going to go on to the College World Series. But then they come back and basically do the same thing to Oregon and then just absolutely pummel them in game three. So this is a very tough team, but Florida is able to escape with a couple of wins because that Virginia game was also tough.
Go ahead.
No, just Ty Evans, who I think is one of the more underrated players in this College World Series, is having a heck of a tournament because on Friday, gets called in the ninth inning to just get on base, basically. And what does he do? Hits a home run to make it 5-4, lets Wyatt Langford come up next to him or after him, and hits a home run after that. And then they finally walk it off. Ty Evans has had a really good start to his College World Series here, and I think he's a sophomore. Doesn't get a whole lot of playing time, but he understands his role. Two games, two home runs, basically the deciding factor in that Oral Roberts game with the two-run home run in the second. And he's just having a really good start to his College World Series.
Yeah, keep in mind, Florida caught a huge break, by the way, in that Oral Roberts game. Because in the eighth inning, with the closer in, you know, manager decides, yeah, you know, I forget how many mound visits I have. I mean, when's the last time you saw that? I don't think we've ever seen something like that. Especially in a pressure cooker situation like the College World Series. So that, to me, was like, oh my God, Oral Roberts is going to pounce on this. And they scratched a run or two. But, I mean, yeah, Florida was able to survive. And personally, I think a lot of people are kind of sensing the fact that it might be Florida and Wake Forest that might be the last two teams standing in this. Because, I mean, the way, you know, Waldrop was excellent last night. And, you know, Wyatt Langford, you know, everyone talks about Jack Caglione, and for good reason they should. He's tied for the nation lead in homers with Brock Wilkin. But Wyatt Langford is showing why he's going to be a top 10 pick in this draft. I mean, the homer he hit against Virginia not only was clutch, but it was an absolute nuke. I think that might be the first home run that's been hit all weekend. So, yeah, and against a Virginia team that came in one of the better pitching staffs and one of the top offenses in the country is the first team out, which was kind of surprising to some people.
Yeah, them and Stanford. Stanford, first time going back-to-back years, going 0-2 in the tournament. They've only won one-plus game once in their last 17 appearances, and they're 1-4 now in their last three. Or no, that'd be, I'm sorry, 1-6 in their last three appearances in the College World Series. So they're kind of having a down year too. And Virginia never went 0-2 in a College World Series that they've appeared in. And they kind of just, they ran into a couple of buzzsaws. They ran into a really good Florida team and then a really good TCU team that kind of just was upset of how things ended with Oral Roberts. And to your credit, Jack Caglione is only 1-for-8 in this College World Series. We haven't seen him on the mound yet. I would expect maybe Wednesday in that first kind of quarterfinals situation. That would be the semis. Yeah, it'd be the semis for Wednesday, because if you win that game, then you're in the College World Series. You're in the championship series that starts on Friday. So I would imagine we'd see him at some point, because they were even hinting in the broadcast on Sunday that we would see him at some point, and we haven't yet. So maybe we don't see him do anything with the bat in this College World Series, but maybe he wins a game for Florida with his arm.
Yeah, and he almost came in against Oral Roberts last night because of the situation that Florida ended up putting themselves in terms of losing count of how many mound visits they had. But yeah, you're right about Virginia. You know, for me, Virginia, you know, was leading the nation in hitting offensively for quite a while. But to me, there's just not enough guys that I look at in that Virginia lineup and say, man, like, you know, for a good pitching staff, you really got to worry about, you know, the only guy to me that you really got to worry about is, or two guys, I should say, is Kyle Teal and Jake Geloff. Everybody else is like pitchable to them. But, you know, you look at Florida, and, like, what are you throwing a Wyatt Langford? Because you got Caglione waiting there. You got Evans also, who's had a phenomenal start to the World Series. And there's a bunch of other guys on that Florida team as well that just go unnoticed because they're just so good and so deep. I mean, this is a top-five baseball team here, Florida is. So, you know, I agree with Virginia, that take there. They ran into a couple buzzsaws. And you feel for Stanford, too. I mean, Quinn Matthews just, you know, his pitch count got a little too high this time in terms of, you know, being able to stay there. And Dolander, they knocked Dolander out of the game pretty early. Like, Stanford's offense did the job. It's just the pitching just wasn't enough.
Yeah, and if you look at it too, Quinn Matthews, just the inability to pitch on the inside part of the plate allowed Tennessee to just sit on the soft stuff low and away. And you just saw that time after time when they scored, I think it was the 3 runs in the one inning against him, tied up at 4-4. He just wouldn't throw a fastball inside. So as a hitter, if you can take away the whole inner part of the plate, it's a lot easier to get hits. And that's what they were doing. They were going up the middle the opposite way. Not a whole lot of pulled baseballs because they just were allowing the ball to get deep and drive it the other way. And I mean, they even said it on the broadcast that you have to at least throw a pitch inside or a couple of fastballs inside to show hitters that you might not be throwing them for strikes, but you're going to go in. So if as a hitter, you can eliminate a full half of the plate, it's a whole lot easier to hit.
And with the way the strike zones have been in this World Series, I mean, the strike zone might as well be the size of a pea because, I mean, at least tonight's zone between Wake Forest and LSU was all over the place. I liked the zones in the other games. They seem a little smaller come the World Series, and I think that's because there's just higher-level umpires and there's just higher-level expectations. So, yeah, I mean, you got to be able to challenge hitters too. It's like, you know, look at what Michael Massey did against Tommy White. First pitch, throws him a fastball, you know, inner third of the plate where White likes it. He put it in play, and Massey got a one pitch out to end an inning. You got to challenge these guys.
See, I'm kind of the opposite. I think umpiring, as far as the strike zone, I think it's been a little bigger than what we're used to because it's especially the top part of the zone. I can't tell you how many curveballs I've seen that look like they cross at the letters and then kind of fall into where a catcher's catching them at the belt that I would think that, okay, crossed high, but the umpire calls it a strike. And then especially on the outside part of the plate on either a righty or a lefty, when the umpire's in the slot, I think they're giving them a good ball off the plate sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, tonight's zone was like that to me. I thought it was a little bit bigger tonight in terms of, you know, the strike zone. I think east to west, they've been fine. I think it's north-south, it's gotten a little expanded.
So now we got to talk about a couple of elimination games coming up this Tuesday. First game, TCU and Oral Roberts, and then Tennessee and LSU. The aforementioned LSU Tigers, who we're kind of hoping move on just so we can see Paul Skeens, Rhett Lauder. But let's talk about TCU Oral Roberts. I don't think we know who's going in either game yet just because of the pitching situation that TCU's has had to go with. We don't have any information yet, but what are you expecting from TCU and Oral Roberts? Are we expecting the same game that we saw the first time, or do we think Oral Roberts is kind of out of pitching and we're kind of expecting TCU to just become TCU?
I mean, they could, but at the same time, just Oral Roberts' offense never goes away. I mean, you just can't count them out like that. I think a lot of people also had TCU as the first team to be eliminated, you know, coming into the week. That's just not the case. They've played good ball. That's going to be a close game than I think – it's going to be a closer game than I think people expect it to be. But, I mean, who knows who's going for either of these teams, right? So – you know, I don't know. I'm going Oral Roberts on this one just because of their history. It just seems like nothing phases these guys. I mean, you take an Oral Roberts team and you put them up against Florida, one of the best teams in the country, and they just go out there and they compete. They compete all night long. And I know they lost, but they just go out there and they fight. They really do, no matter who's on the mound. So maybe they'll get some little spark on the mound. I don't know. But I just think Oral Roberts takes this one just because, you know, the streak they've been on as well over the last, 26, 28 games or something has been remarkable. And I think Oral Roberts is the most resilient team of the field that's left.
And now that other game too, LSU-Tennessee, I think it kind of stinks for both those teams because Oral Roberts and TCU had the day off. So they got a day off to get their bodies rested. LSU and Tennessee have to play the next day. And Tennessee's going to be down a big part of that bullpen in Chase Burns because he had to throw six innings today, and he tied the College World Series record for Tennessee for most strikeouts in a game with 9. He basically, you know, came in relief and had a really good start, you could say. 6 innings, 2 hits, no runs, 9 strikeouts, no walks. After Dolander, like we said, couldn't get out of the fourth because he only threw 3 innings today. So it's going to be a little bit of a tough matchup too for both of these teams that don't get the day off to rest their bodies, don't get a day off for their bullpen arms. So it's going to be a lot of piecing it together, and I don't think Paul Skenes is going to be able to come back. I don't think Chase Dolander is going to be able to come back. So also, I don't think I just lost his name. I don't think there's going to be a lot of guys that are going to be able to come back right away for LSU who threw in today's game.
Yeah, now the good thing for LSU is that they only used 2 pitchers in the game, Floyd and Thatcher Hearn. Now, Thatcher Hearn's one of your bigger coaches. Yeah, it happens. They all kind of look the same, to be quite honest with you. Thatcher Hearn's a big component of the pen, don't get me wrong. But it's like, if you're LSU, I mean, you're throwing Gavin Guidry out there to start. I don't know. I mean, he's a big part of the pen, too. Like, Guidry was warming up at the very end, like, just in case they needed him to close the game out. It's like, but I don't know who else you go with on the mound. Like, you have to go Gavin Guidry start. And then you just got to say a prayer that the bullpen can keep it together. I mean, we haven't seen Christian Little yet, and for good reason. He's been terrible in the second half and in the postseason. I don't even think he's pitched a game in the postseason. So there's that. You know, you got a couple lefties like Riley Cooper and I forget the name of the lefty who was warming up alongside Hurd and Guidry tonight. We got him too. It's just like, I don't know. I think you got to go Gavin Guidry and just hope he gives you 6 good innings. I mean, Tennessee's offense is definitely good, but I think it's pitchable for a guy like Guidry who, you know, when LSU needed a guy to step up because their starting pitchers were not pitching well in the second half, Guidry was the guy who stepped up and threw the ball well. So, and I mean, the whole nation wants LSU to win because we want to see them face Wake Forest again.
Yeah, and I mean, we keep talking about it and we keep drooling over it, and so does everybody else about Wake Forest, but they really showed why they're the number one team in the country, just having professional at-bats. We talked about Lee's at-bat. We talked about him laughing with the third base coach and then all of a sudden just sitting on a curveball and hitting to the opposite field. But that is the sexiest pick, I think, right now as far as who we want to see play in the semifinals. And then we want to see that, if necessary, game on Thursday between Rhett Lauder and Paul Skenes, which means that they're probably not going to be able to throw in the championship series. But it's kind of just one of those, all right, we're going to watch 2 top 10 pitchers go at it and just, you know, see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, it could be one of the greatest college baseball games ever, if that's the case. And we hope it happens. But yeah, I mean, if Skenes goes up against Wake, I mean, Wake's offense hasn't been as electric as it's been in the regular season and in the regionals and the super regionals, just because the pitching in the College World Series is just at such a high level, right? I mean, through the first 2 games, they've only scored 6 combined runs. Now, they've won, obviously, because they have good pitching. But, I mean, you throw Skenes up there against Wake, oof, I don't know if that offense can handle him. But, you know, they may not have to face him, too, based on, you know, if they win the winner of this Tennessee-LSU game, that first one. And, you know, they'll likely have Seth Keener go, who's pitched really well for them. He had 13 strikeouts in the regional opener against George Mason. But that was a while ago, too. So, you know, who knows what could happen. I just think, you know, if you're a college baseball fan or a baseball fan in general and you're not watching this, what are you doing? I mean, this is the most exciting baseball we've had, in my opinion, since the WBC. Like, I can't think of one Major League Baseball game that sticks out this year where it's like, man, I'd rather be in that moment than watch, you know, any of these College World Series games.
Yeah, and really they've been, we've had 8 games and all of them have been great. I thought that maybe the Tennessee LSU game where Skenes was just, you know, three up, three down, just humming them down. That was going to be the this is an okay game because Skeens went well, and then all of a sudden it turns into 5-3, where now you need a big out from your bullpen, and we've kind of been poo-pooing LSU's bullpen all game, and we talked about it in the beginning of the episode too, but they've come out and they've shut guys down. I mean, they gave up the one run today to Wake Forest, but this has been a really good LSU bullpen that if they could have been like this through the latter half of the conference schedule, could have still been the number one team in the country.
Yeah, and then we could be talking about LSU in terms of where Wake is playing and who they're playing. It's a big difference. I mean, not extremely big, but it's definitely a difference in terms of seeding and weather, all that. So, yeah, I mean, this is just exciting baseball. I think, you know, for the game too, I think this week has just really shown like how much fun college baseball is. And, you know, I hope a lot of people watch tonight, and I hope a lot of people keep watching, because this baseball is just, it's been amazing compared to, you know, what we've seen in the majors. And I guess we could transition into that now. You know, you said it last episode, and I put out a tweet yesterday, a nice little thread, because the Red Sox, again, were the Sunday night matchup against the Yankees. It's like, who on earth cared about watching that game on Sunday when you had the College World Series, you had the U.S. Open on last night, which, by the way, was awesome. Late night major golf. I'd watch that any day over a random Red Sox-Yankees game where both teams are in the last two spots of the East. So, you know, again, you know, Major League Baseball's just got to fix it. But let's transition into the big leagues a little bit. Couple big stories tonight. First, let's start. Joey Votto's back for the Reds. He hits a home run. He hasn't played since the middle of August of last year. And super exciting now with Joey Votto and Ella De La Cruz, who's kind of reminiscent of O'Neill Cruz. But, you know, I think he's just got a heck of a lot more power. So, yeah, here come the Cincinnati Reds now. And this NL Central has gotten really interesting, because not only are the Reds good and the Brewers occupy the top spot, but the Pirates are also really good.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm trying to check right now to see if the Reds won today, but if they did, that's nine straight, and they're going to be well over 500. Let's see. They did, in fact, win today, so they just overtook Milwaukee, half-game lead of the Central. This is a team that at the beginning of the year, if you said that they were going to be anywhere near even the third spot in the NL Central, people would be calling you crazy. But the likes of Ely De La Cruz, Jonathan India is finally healthy. I know they just lost Hunter Green on the IL, and he was doing really good. And Ashcott is kind of stumbling out the way, but Abbott, the pitcher that they just called up, has been really good in his first three starts. You're going to get Joey Votto back. You know, Nick Senzel is going to do something for this team down the stretch. You have a really good core that I think at some point you're going to add to this team. I don't see why they're going to be sellers at the deadline, and they're just going to get healthier. At some point you're going to get Green back. Hopefully it's just for the 15 game, you know, IL stint with the hip injury. But this is a really good rotation, and Ely De La Cruz has just been a spark plug in the middle of that lineup.
Yeah, and I think it's just super refreshing. I mean, it seems like every year it's just the same team after the same team doing so well. And, you know, the Reds and the Pirates are all, like, just shockingly to everybody in it. They're in the fold, and we're starting to get into late June here. So I think it's super exciting. I think the fact that MLB expanded the playoff format and added that last third wild card spot is huge in terms of, you know, more teams being in it and contending. And speaking of teams that are contending, how about the Miami Marlins and Luis Arraez, who went 5-for-5. He's got 102 hits on the year, and he's now at an even 400 batting average. Could he be the first since Ted Williams to hit 400 or higher? I mean, he's been really good, and because of it, the Marlins have played some good ball.
Yeah, the Marlins are also 10 games over 500. They just drubbed the Blue Jays today, and that offense, which is faltering right now. I don't know what's going on with that offense. They either score 10 runs or they only score 3, and it seems like right now they're only scoring 3 runs a game. But then also that pitching staff. I mean, they sent down Alek Manoah, all the way to the Florida Complex League. We don't know when he'll ever be back. But this, going back to the Marlins, though, they should be buyers at the deadline, too. And Luis Arraez, who they came out with the MLB.com like MVP rankings. I don't know if you saw this, and he was fourth. It's like, how are you going to have somebody bat 400 for the first time in 80 years and be the fourth MVP voter? It's like, it doesn't make sense. We're seeing something that hasn't been done. Basically, I guess you can, it's still considered the live ball era, but this is a different era of baseball than what Ted Williams played in the 40s. And we have him as fourth. I don't understand that.
Yeah, it's more than half a century, basically, since someone has done it. That's how significant this is. And you know what? I understand why people have him fourth, because he's not as flashy as maybe, you know, a guy with a lot of power. You know, he doesn't hit homers. But still, you're right. He's hitting 400. I bet by the end of the year, you know, if he's somehow hitting over 400 still, you know, he'll propel up those rankings. But yeah, again, just excitement out of teams who, you know, nobody expected to be any good this year. Like, the Marlins made that trade, and everyone was like, okay. Like, you know, they gave up Lopez, which was kind of a shock, but then we were also shocked that they got Luis Arraez in return. And it's like, okay, like, this Marlins team is trying to contend in a tough division with the Braves and the Mets, who are dreadful. But still, I mean, that is a hard division to compete in. We've seen it. I mean, have the Miami Marlins, aside from the 2 years that they won the World Series, ever even won the NL East?
They didn't even win the NL East when they won the World Series. They were wild card teams.
They were wild card. Oh, my. And in 2020, they made the wild card.
Yeah, all three times that they've made the postseason, they've been wild card teams. And going back to this, a lot of people want to talk about who won the trade, too. And it's like, I think the Marlins won the trade more. I know the Twins are in first place, and that's a pathetic division. We could talk about that, you know, another time or whenever. But we know how bad the AL Central is. But the Marlins are now 13-3 in their last 16 games. Luis Arraez is hitting 400 at the top of that lineup, and it's giving guys like Jesus Sanchez, Jorge Soler, guys like that, a chance to get more RBI opportunities. And I mean, even though Sandy Alcantara's having a really down year, actually, that's an understatement. They're still finding ways to win. And I think Luis Arraez is part of that fighting chance.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you look at that division, the Marlins are in second place, 4.5 games back of the Braves. I know I was forgetting another team. The Phillies are in third. And then you got the Mets and the Nationals at the bottom of the division. I mean, the Mets are dreadful. I mean, at this rate, I don't think they're making the playoffs. And, you know, the Phillies are going to be tough. But in terms of the wild card, I mean, you look at the NL wild card, Miami seems like a lock right now. I mean, they're in first in the wild card standings, up 2.5 games on the Giants, who are second. Then you have the Dodgers in third. And you look at these wild card standings, too, in the National League. You got the Dodgers in third. You got the Phillies a game back. A game back of them is the Brewers. And so then you got the Padres, the Pirates, the Cubs. I mean, this is a stacked wild card, all because the Cincinnati Reds are in first. And how about the Arizona Diamondbacks in first place as well? They're 44-29, second best team in the National League.
Yeah, now they probably had the NL Rookie of the Year, too, in Corbin Carroll. This guy is as good as it gets. He's pretty much got five tools. The power is starting to come there a little bit this year, but this has always been a guy that's a really good defender, has tremendous speed and a tremendous arm, and a good hit ability. Now we're starting to see some of that power come into play with, I think now he's got 13 home runs. I think he just hit a home run today. But this is a pitching staff with Merrill Kelly and Zach Gallen who are doing fantastic at the front end of this rotation, and they're taking advantage of the Giants and the Dodgers not doing what the Giants and Dodgers should be doing, especially the Dodgers. The Dodgers are having a disappointing year right now. I know they're still technically in the playoffs, but if they're the third wild card team and they have to go somewhere to play a playoff spot, a series, and they're not hosting one in Dodger Stadium, I mean, you're talking about guys in Mookie Betts and Freddie Freeman who are all-stars, but Betts is having a down year. He's hitting under 270. Freddie Freeman's really the only one that's been consistently doing anything, and they just had Bobby Miller give up five, or I think he gave up eight runs to the Giants after having four great starts. This rotation, other than Kershaw, is kind of struggling a little bit. I know you're supposed to get Walker Buehler back at some point. Dustin May, I believe, is back already. And I know you lost Urias for a little bit. So this Dodgers pitching staff is a little bit plagued by injury, but this is still an offense that's kind of not doing a whole lot there in Chavez Ravine.
Yeah, it's weird too, because like, this is a capable offense. You got JD Martinez now. I mean, Jason Hayward's playing center field. Who would have thought that was going to happen? So you have that. The pitching has been dreadful. Like Buehler, I don't even know if Buehler's supposed to come back this year. Late this year. Noah Syndergaard has been atrocious. Ever since he left the Mets, he has been horrible. Like, it actually stinks for me, because as a kid growing up on Long Island in high school, you know, me and my dad were like, we want to go see Syndergaard pitch live. That's how much fun he was to watch back, you know, when he was a rookie and in 2016. But ever since then, you know, when he started getting hurt, it's just like he was kind of falling on that line. He was still throwing hard for the Mets, but then he had the Tommy John surgery, and now he's just he is terrible. I love this quote after that one start where he would give up his newborn child. Or he doesn't actually have a newborn child. I forget what the word is. Yeah, his theoretical newborn child to go back to the old self. Like, if Noah Syndergaard was his old self on the Dodgers, like, that is must-see TV. The problem is the dude could barely throw 94 miles an hour now. It's like, it's bad. So, you know, that's a big piece that, you know, the Dodgers thought was going to work, and they're trying to fill him. You know, Gavin Stone was up, and, you know, I don't know. I mean, this Dodgers team's a little shaky, but, yeah, we're talking about all these teams. And we're probably talking about teams that probably don't get talked about at all. I mean, you look at the Diamondbacks, you look at the Reds, you look at the Pirates. You know, these are guys and teams, and the Marlins, like, we want to see on Sunday Night Baseball. I want to see Luis Araza, dude, hit 400, which hasn't been done in over half a century. I want to see the Arizona Diamondbacks, who are the biggest shock in the league right now, and Corbin Carroll and Zach Gallen, who Zach Gallen might end up winning the NL Cy Young. Who knows? I want to see the Reds with a young stud, Ella De La Cruz, and Joey Votto, who keep in mind, is not too far off from a 40 home run season not too long ago. And now he's back and hit a home run, had a big hit tonight for the Reds too as well. And, you know, who knows what could happen there. And I want to see the Pirates, you know, because Andrew McCutchen's having a, you know, he's having a good year, but it's nice to see him back in Pittsburgh. And, you know, Brian Reynolds too, they're good. O'Neill Cruz will be back later on in the year. And heck, Paul Skeens could be pitching for them in big games in September. So, you know, these are guys we want to see instead of another dreadful Red Sox-Yankees matchup. So I wanted to get your opinion on this. The next Sunday Night Baseball game is Dodgers-Astros. Now, I know all these things are pre-planned. I get it, right? They make the Sunday Night Baseball schedule way before the season starts, so I understand. But, God, we just got to get better in terms of, you know, what the fans want to see, because, I mean, I don't know about you, I had no even interest in watching the highlights of that Yankee-Red Sox game on Sunday. Like, I was glued. I had the College World Series on one computer, and then I had the U.S. Open on my TV.
Yeah, to be honest with you, the only way I was following along with the Yankees-Red Sox is every time it came on the bottom line as I was watching the College World Series game. It's like, there's no way I was turning off. What game was that? That was yesterday, so that was the LSU-Tennessee game. There was no way I was turning that game off to watch Red Sox-Yankees when I could have just watched the highlights whenever, and it was just another game in June. But, yeah, this Sunday schedule coming up, Astros-Dodgers, yeah, that's good because you get to see the Dodgers who, you know, yeah, they're on ESPN, it seems like, every other, you know, week. But you still get to see the stars of the Astros. You still get to see the stars of the Dodgers. But, I mean, looking at the schedule now, you know, even like a Mariners Orioles, I wouldn't mind seeing that. Gunnar Henderson, Adley Rutschman against Julio Rodriguez, and I don't know who's pitching for that. I don't think they have it that far in advance. But Yennier Cano, Felix Bautista, and that Orioles team who, if it wasn't for the Rays, would have the best record in baseball. And then the Mariners are struggling right now. They're kind of on a hot spell right now. But seeing Julio Rodriguez play, seeing Logan Gilbert pitch or Luis Castillo pitch, would have been nice to see too. And just looking at some other matchups, maybe like a Braves Reds series. You got the young superstar Ronald Acuña Jr., the young might be superstar, and Ellie De La Cruz playing against each other. And this is the other thing too that MLB Network used to be really good about. They used to have the young It was like the young star showcase. Yeah. It was like a young star showcase where during the week, if you had like a Ronald Acuña Jr. versus an Ellie De La Cruz, they used to show it. But now they'll just show, I don't know, Red Sox and Tigers or something. If it's not the Red Sox or the Yankees, it seems like MLB Network is hard-pressed to show it.
Yeah, and it's tough with so many big market teams kind of out of the fold right now. I mean, the Mets are dreadful. The Yankees are dreadful. Yeah, but I think it's still very exciting that we have a lot of these new teams now that are competing and, you know, are likely going to be in the playoffs this year. So, you know, I guess a little bit of a quicker episode today. We kind of covered everything baseball-wise, unless you got something.
Oh, I got something for you because I saw it. I don't know if you saw it, but being where you called baseball games in Carolina, I didn't know if you saw that NC State Cannon Peebles is transferred.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up.
NC State. So I was thinking to myself, I was like, that is back-to-back years of stud freshmen from NC State transferring after having an All-American type season for NC State. So I just wanted to get your opinion on it because I don't know how much you watched Cannon Peebles this year just because you bounced from High Point to Peoria as quickly as you did, but I know you saw Tommy White last year, Tommy Tanks. So I just wanted to get your opinion on that.
Yeah, I'm actually really glad you brought that up because I actually was talking to a couple people about him today and was really surprised when that came across my Twitter feed. So this is the second year in a row. You're right. You know, even though I'm not in North Carolina right now, I'm still a very avid follower of North Carolina baseball. Was high on NC State last year, just like I am high on Wake now. And I still follow State, you know, because that's one of those programs where, you know, they're historically good. And Elliott Avent is historically, you know, one of the better coaches of all time. But here's the problem with Elliott Avent. Remember when people were saying Tommy White was going in the portal because he wanted to go close to home? No. Not the case. He went in the portal not only because of the NIL stuff, but he went in the portal because they wouldn't let him play the field. Now, Cannon Peebles, who, you know, freshman catcher out here hitting 356, great bat, big hits this year. But NC State just has a logjam behind the plate. Jacob Cozart's their other catcher, and he's really good. Great offensively, great defensively. He's a sophomore, now going to be a junior next year. So there's really no room for Peebles to catch in his next few years at State with Cozart being the way he's playing. So, you know, it's another one of those situations where I think Elliott Avent could have easily had Tommy White play a position last year. They just chose not to. I think this is just too much of a logjam behind the plate where Cannon Peebles ultimately, you know, these guys want their stock to rise. And the only way you're going to get your stock to rise is if you could play the field too, because let's be honest, nobody's drafting a DH in the first round. I don't even think you think of a guy as a DH when you draft him in the 30th round. So, you know, so here we are. And, you know, the transfer portal is just such a big thing in college baseball. I think it might be bigger in college baseball than it is in basketball, to be quite honest with you. But yeah, here's another guy that Elliott Avent kind of has to just hang his head on here. And it's like, okay, you know, not really much State can do with there. But I mean, with numbers that Cannon Peebles put up, I mean, this is another one of those guys where we can debate, hey, like, will he stay in Power 5 somewhere? You know, will he change in conference? You know, because who knows what's going to happen with Wake Forest? You know, I don't think Bennett Lee is going to be back next year if somebody, you know, decides to pick him up. I don't know what his eligibility is. So, yeah, you know, I don't know. But I feel for NC State here because when they lost Tommy White, it was like, okay, we got to tear this thing down and kind of rebuild it. And guys who State ended up plucking from the transfer portal this year just didn't work out. Carter Trice didn't work out. Parker Nolan didn't work out. Dom Pilalli, who they plucked 2 years ago, came in a duo from Charlotte with Gino Groover. He had a bad year this year. It was a little banged up. So, yeah, it's kind of tough for State right now, who historically has a great program.
Yeah, so like I said, I just wanted to get your opinion on that. If you had to guess, do you think, if I gave you two options of basically the only option, staying in conference or going out of conference, but to stay in a power, in another Power 5 conference, where do you think Cannon Peebles goes?
See, I don't know. I don't have much on him. I just want to see, like, you know, real quick, I'm going to hit the Google. Just because I want to know, like, you know, where's this dude from? You know, what exactly his stats are? Because, like, you know, playing at home is also a really big thing. Like, everybody thought when Tommy White went to the portal, it's like, okay, he's going to Florida. Like, it was almost a lock that he was going to Florida or Florida State. And it didn't happen. So everyone was shocked about that. You know, I don't know.
Yeah, because I remember when Tommy White first made the decision that there was a lot of people thinking that with the new coaching staff at Florida State, that maybe they'd be able to get him in there with Blink Jarrett taking the job there. But just, I guess LSU was more enticing with the NIL deals and just the overall prowess that they had going into this season. I mean, they were able to get Paul Skeens. They had Dylan Cruz already, Trey Morgan III. So I guess something told Tommy White to go to LSU more than to go to Florida or Florida State, which, I mean, you couldn't have gone wrong with either of those teams other than maybe Florida State just because of the year that Florida State had. But Florida, I think, I don't know where he would have played. Maybe third base, because I think Wyatt Langford's their center fielder. Caglione's their first baseman. So maybe third base like he's playing with LSU. But, I mean, LSU had I think LSU had the better team, like I said, with Cruz and Skeens and Trey Morgan III.
And this is a guy, Cannon Peebles, who wants to play. Remember, he led the NC State Wolfpack in RBIs with 50, and he only played 39 games. And he hit .352, 12 homers. I mean, he's raw. He's from Virginia, from what I saw. So, you know, Kyle Teal is going to be, you know, a first-round pick this year. Kyle Teal, one of the better hitters in the entire country. So Virginia needs a catcher. I mean, heck, stay in conference, go play for Virginia. But I don't know. I mean, I think it's a little too early to figure that out. It's always so hard to determine what schools these guys want to go to because every team's going to make their pitch. Like, Tommy White had to have seen the Florida facilities and the Florida State facilities before he decided to go to LSU. I just feel like anyone would want to at least see the facilities and meet the coaches or whatever. But, yeah, I think that's kind of another shocker on the NC State side, losing another guy who was great as a freshman, and here we are again. Kind of disappointing for Elliot Avent, who's one of the best coaches, you know, in the country, kind of to have the situation, you know, towards him. I know there was a lot of controversy with the way the whole Tommy White thing unfolded, where apparently there was rumors that Tommy White didn't show up at his exit meeting with Avent last year, and there was a little bit of tension because he wasn't playing the field. That's why he entered the portal. But I don't know. I don't get that from the people side. You know, more will come out eventually. But yeah, you know, portal's filling up, and with a lot of other names too. You know, Kennedy Jones of UNCG is a guy who could play Power 5 ball. He's in the portal. LSU just landed an Xavier player who just hit the portal the other day. So, yeah, I mean, think about it. These coaches that are fighting for a national championship right now are still actively recruiting, too. So it never dies. The portal never dies.
Yeah, because not only are you actively recruiting guys in the portal, but you got to still actively recruit guys that are on your team from going into the portal. Or even if they go into the portal, you have to still actively recruit them to come back. I mean, you can go in the portal, but you can always come back. So it's a lot tougher nowadays, especially with NIL, where everybody can kind of just throw NIL money around. And, you know, Baker, the NCAA president, was on the broadcast this afternoon and kind of said something that I agreed with, is that they kind of want to go to like a contract type of agreement with NIL, which I think is a perfect idea because he's saying that a lot of people are getting promised NIL money, not getting the NIL money, and that's what's causing them to go into the transfer portal. And it's like, if you're getting promised NIL money, you should be signing some type of contract with them, even if it's just a year-by-year contract. That way you don't have to stay at the school for, you know, 2-3 years. but you sign the deal for that year, you get all the money that you're supposed to get. Or if somebody like Tommy White wants to sign a two-year contract for NIL with LSU and their boosters or whoever they're going to sign it with, and he's going to stay there his sophomore and junior year, then you could do that. And you can sign a two-year, $3 million NIL deal. But there's got to be something that, like the, I don't remember his name, but the Florida quarterback. I don't know if you heard about this, but he was promised like $12 million in NIL. And then they just said when he signed that, hey, we don't have it for you. And he is transferring before ever playing a single down for Florida. I don't know if you heard about that or not, but he committed and then is basically now transferring because the $12 million was kind of just a blowing smoke up his butt to get him to sign at Florida.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, an everyday guy. If you're an everyday guy listening to this podcast, it's like going to work. If you work for somebody and you don't get paid, you either get to get pissed off and demand the money, or you get to quit, go somewhere where you get the money. That's just how life works. So yeah, no, I liked it. I thought that interview was great, by the way. And he's only been, what's his name? I forgot his name. You said it, but he's only been in the chair as the NCAA president for a few months now. But for him to come on and say something like that, I mean, I enjoyed it. I thought it was a great interview, and I think it's worrisome for teams, I mean, that are trying to build something. And I'll just give you an example. You know, High Point, not that they're anything, but we can just talk about it for a second. But, you know, they parted ways with their pitching coach, and everybody's in the portal now. Everybody. That's just how the nature of this year, this generation of college baseball works at any level, Power Five or not. It's just – it's scary. I think I saw a number where it's like 40% of guys on rosters come from the portal. It's a little nuts. It's like you commit somewhere and it's like, okay, the fit's not good. I'm just going to go in the portal. There's a difference between going in the portal for fit and money. I feel like the people's one, he's in the portal because he wants to play. And he's proven that he could play at a high level for a really good team that could compete for a national championship. Now, there's plenty of other guys who are in it for the money, and I don't blame them. But that's just kind of where we are.
Yeah, and I mean, I can speak for personal experiences too. It's like when I was getting recruited to go to college, I went to Southeastern University, and I got recruited by a different coaching staff. And when I got on the campus for my orientation, they got fired, and it was going to be a completely new staff. And I was kind of thinking to myself, I was like, do I want to stay here and have to kind of just, because I already knew he was bringing in a whole bunch of new people. I ended up staying, spoiler alert, but it's like, it goes through your head. It's like, oh crap. It's like, I got recruited by a completely different staff than the one that's here. Are they going to like me enough to keep me on the team? Cause we had the tryouts and I ended up making the team and everything, but it kind of just goes through your head. It's like, oh, do I stay here and go, or do I try to follow the people that recruited me? And I think they ended up going to Montreat, which is in North Carolina. And I was just like, I don't want to go to North Carolina. I want to stay in Florida, because I was an hour away from where I lived. So I understand that part, but the whole part about leaving for money, it's like, you, is that what we're leaving for? NIL?
They're also college baseball players. Like, you're not supposed to be making money playing college. That's the whole point. Like, I know this whole NIL thing is player driven. Right? It's all, oh, you know, the players should be able to sell their own name image like this. You know, the whole Zion Williamson, you can print his jersey and people would buy it. You know, heck, I'd buy a Paul Skeens LSU jersey or a Scherzy if it was available, because I love watching the guy. But I mean, Christ, man, you know, we play in the NCAA. Like, you're getting an education. You know, it's half about playing ball, half getting the education. Most of these guys who play at a high level are getting their education paid for anyways. That's basically like your compensation. But I mean, from the player's side, I get it. I think it's great for the players that they are able to make money playing college baseball, selling all this name, image, likeness stuff, you know, and also something under the rug. Like, every athlete ends up getting NIL in some capacity, whether it's, you know, if they have a deal with an outside company, they have an agent, some community service thing. Like, you end up getting it. Just a matter of how much you get depends on what kind of athlete you are. So.
Yeah. They were getting this before. It's just that now it's out in the open instead of in brown McDonald's bags.
Right. Right. Yeah. It's just a little
instead
disappointing.
Instead of handshakes, you're getting actual, like, here's the money.
Yeah. It's disappointing to see that this has come this is what it's come to. Like, for example, like Tommy White, and this is kind of similar to what we were talking about last week with Trout and Ohtani. Like, Tommy White played for NC State. He electrified baseball. He played on the East Coast, so people got to see him a lot. He was great. You know, did I watch a lot of LSU regular season baseball? Not really. It's a little late sometimes, you know? It's like, you know, I watch a lot of NC State. I watch a lot of Wake Forest. You know, LSU, on the other hand, it's like, you know, now that I'm out in the Midwest and LSU is kind of in my time zone, yeah, I was able to watch them a lot more. But you look at the average college baseball fan, most of them coming from the East Coast, they're like, you know, there's another player. There's also other players on the team. Like, Dylan Crews is going to be, you know, top three pick in the draft. Paul Skeens is going to be a top three pick in the draft. It's like, damn, man. Like, the way Tommy Tank's just electrified baseball was kind of awesome last year. For him to go to the portal was just a shock to everybody last year. But that's just where we are.
Yeah, and I don't mind the NIL. It's just I don't want it to become free agency. I don't want it to become where you start at one school your freshman year, and then you do good, and so you go to your sophomore year, you go to a different school, and then your junior year, you go to a different school. It's like, I don't want it to be that. I want it to be – I want guys to stay at a college so I can – especially Florida State. I'll put it that way because Florida State is my team. It's like, yeah, do I like when transfers come in? Of course. But if you're a freshman and you're a fantastic freshman, I want to see you till your junior year because I want to be able to root for you for those 3 years. I want to see you get drafted as a Florida State player. I want you to be in the league as a Florida State player. Same thing with football, same thing with basketball. So it's like, I don't want it to become where every year you're going to a different school just because you can get more money from this school because you had a good freshman year and then you had a good sophomore year. It's like, I want you like Tommy White, I understand transferring, but like if he transfers again after this year, then it's kind of like, why? It's like, why are we going to three different schools? It's like, because then you can't really build anything. Yeah, the parity is going to be there because everybody's going to a different school and all these other schools are getting, you know, good players, but it's still going to be the elite of the elite. It's still going to be the LSUs that get everybody, the Floridas, the Vandys, the, you know, insert top power five team Stanfords, you know, got like teams like that. So it's like, I don't want it to turn into free agency.
If Tommy White transfers again, which I highly doubt he does, but if he does, I mean, holy smokes. I mean, you hit the nail on the head there. Like, it's going to turn into just swapping teams to where you get them the most money, and we don't want that to happen. But, yeah, you know, who knows? You know, maybe 2 weeks from now we can expect more big-time names in the portal. But, you know, Cannon Peebles is one of the first eye-openers that's in the portal here, and we'll see what happens. So, yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, by the way, because I did have a lot of discussions with some people about that today. So, yeah, good call.
Yeah, so now, not so short of an episode as well, but now let's get into our young lads of the week. I'll let you go first this time.
Yeah, I'm going to have to go with, a hometown guy for me personally. You know, for those who don't know, I am from Long Island. Matt Hogan, the man who hit the inside the park home run for Oral Roberts last night, against Florida, is also a Long Islander, is a good story too. Was at Vandy to start his collegiate career, didn't play, went in the portal because he wanted to play, finds a home in Oral Roberts and hits it inside the park home run, the first one in College World Series history. So super cool. Cool to have someone like near my hometown. You know, my brother played with him, travel ball. I'm sure at some point I played against him. So, yeah, super cool on that standpoint. And, again, just providing more excitement on why people should be watching these games. It's very electrifying. So I am going Matt Hogan of Oral Roberts as my young lad of the week.
And as much as I hate to give Florida any type of credit because I'm a Florida State fan, I'm going Ty Evans as my young lad of the week. He comes up big in that game against Virginia, excuse me, making it 5-4 with this home run. And then 2 days later, comes up clutch against Oral Roberts, gets the two-run home run the opposite way to start the scoring for Florida and ended up helping them win because they won by one run against Oral Roberts. And Ty Evans, who has not got a whole lot of playing time, has been showing why he should be getting more playing time next year for Florida.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that one. So two good ones right there. Sadly, our next episode probably going to be the last episode for quite a while that we'll be talking college baseball, because hopefully, well, I mean, we should have a national champion by then. So for all you people that complain, oh, all they talk about is college baseball, how about watch it? Because it's exciting and it's fun. And now we're getting down to the wire. And we could have the most highly anticipated pitching matchup in all of college baseball history coming up in just a couple days. So stay tuned for that. Great episode. And yeah, my only message to you, the listeners of the Young Lads podcast, watch what's going on in Omaha, because it's a lot more exciting than what's going on with some of the bigger teams in the big leagues. Or you just watch the Cincinnati Reds, because they're really cool too.
Yeah, or the Miami Marlins every time Luis Arraez grabs a bat and goes up to the plate. But
yeah, Diamondbacks wouldn't be a good option too. Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, Corbin Carroll, NL Rookie of the Year.
That's right.
Zach Gallen, NL Cy Young. Maybe. We'll have to see and find out. But that'll do it for this episode of the Young Lads. Again, this is episode 8. So episode 9, hopefully we'll be talking about a national champion and the run they made during the College World Series. And then we'll start getting back into more MLB time, because that'll be the middle of the season. Maybe we'll talk about what trades need to happen, what teams need to be buyers, what teams need to be sellers. And then hopefully we'll start getting a couple of guests on the podcast, so you don't have to just hear us talk for an hour and 15 minutes every time. But Harris, as always, I enjoyed it. And we'll see you next week.
Phenomenal episode as always, Peter. Hope you enjoyed this one, and episode 9 coming shortly. So yeah, watch what's going on in Omaha, people.
So for Harris Eisenberg, I'm Peter DeFeed Jr. saying so long. Next week.